Okay, it gives me great pleasure to announce our 10-minute speaker, Sarah M. from Aurora Grandy.
My name is Sarah, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for having me. It's really an honor and a privilege to be here. Thank you, Anna, for asking me to do this. It's cool to be the first one to kick off this meeting, so hopefully there's a lot of other people that will follow. I was pretty nervous, and then I remembered you guys are all my people, and I'm still pretty nervous, but it's all good. So here's my story, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up in Ventura with a mother and a father. They're still married, and I have one older brother, so our family was pretty average. We were well off, I suppose you could say. We never went without. We didn't have a lot of extras, but we had everything that we needed. My parents were business owners. They came to be when I grew up, and so it was really instilled in me a lot of morals and values, you know, work ethic and honesty and all those kinds of things that you want to teach people to, you know, grow up and be a good person. I was always fairly good at school as far as getting good grades and whatnot, and that's kind of really the only thing I felt like I had going for me. My brother got into quite a bit of trouble. I remember he had a surgery and found some fun with Oxycontin, and this is his story, but when he got off of that, he got into really hard stuff, and so he was always in trouble. I remember visiting him in rehab. He's 4 years older than me, and that sort of stuff. So it was really easy for me to hide what I was doing because he was always kind of the center of attention and always had such big issues going on. So that was really convenient for me. I started drinking when I was about 13. It was just fun kind of stuff with friends after school, whatnot. When I was in high school, it became more like a party scene. I didn't really have a lot of friends, but I had like one friend and they'd bring me to the party, and I was that person that was always blacked out. I was a blackout drinker from the time that I started. And that was always my goal. Just when I started drinking, it was like, let's get as messed up as we can. Isn't that the whole point? So I did that and never really got in too much trouble. A little kind of slaps on the wrist here and there, probably some groundings and whatnot. But yeah, so I graduated high school and started going to Ventura College. And there I got my first DUI when I was 20. And I remember being on the freeway and my cousin was with me who was totally sober, and I just took off speeding when I saw the CHP got on the freeway, and I thought, this will teach me my lesson, this is what I need, because I knew that I had been drinking a lot and I knew that the things I were doing weren't, you know, it wasn't okay for me to be doing the things that I was doing, and I just didn't know how to learn my lesson, and I really thought maybe this would help me, which is crazy thinking, but you know, we're alcoholics, so I guess it makes sense. So then I remember talking to my dad when I got out of jail that day, and he told me that my mom and my brother and himself had all got DUIs when they were 20, and I was like, well, this is just in the cards for me then, like, this was unavoidable, you know? So I brushed that one off, and, you know, that was kind of the first real major consequence of my drinking. And I was on my bicycle, which was fine. I thought, great, I get exercise now, I don't have to get a gym membership, this is great, I'll just ride my bike to college. I remember coming to one morning on a sidewalk, talking to a police officer, going, why are you talking? What's going on here? And they were like, what are you doing? And I had no idea what I was doing. I just came to in a blackout. I had been out all night doing God knows what. You know, my mom came and picked me up. And so that was when kind of like more things were kind of happening, where I was like, people are going to see what I'm doing here. And I didn't like that. So I just tried to excel in school, and I did pretty well at Ventura College for about a year, and it was a little less than a year. So that was when I was 20. That was in February, and October, I decided that since Ventura sucked and that was the cause of my problems, I was going to move to Oregon. So I moved with some friends up to Portland. Shit went from bad to worse real quick, and I was back in Ventura by January. So that was the first time I thought, you know, changing a zip code would fix my problems. It didn't. So I went back to college, and I graduated from Ventura College and got accepted to Cal Poly in their mechanical engineering program. So I went there in September when I was 22. I'm 31 now. I don't know what year it is. I still have a terrible perception of time. So that was, I went up to Cal Poly and things just escalated. You know, my drinking just, it was what it always was. It was daily blackout drinking. I managed to get through my first quarter there. And in my second quarter, I had spent my entire student loan. I smoked it away, snorted it away, drank it away, and it was gone. And I remember in February, my grandmother passed away. And my dad was driving back. They lived up north in Ukiah. And my dad was driving back to Ventura, and he stopped to see me. And I was going to ask him for rent money because I had spent everything that I had. And he was telling me that they didn't know how they were going to pay for this funeral. And that was really a low for me at that moment of, what the hell am I doing with my life? You know, I had all these goals and hopes and dreams, and here I am. I don't have a dime to my name, and I'm just a fucking alcoholic drinking every single day from the time I get up to the time I go to bed. And so that was the first time I ever went to AA, and that was in San Luis Obispo. I stayed there for less than 3 months. I didn't like what I heard because I thought I could, like, learn how to drink, maybe. They don't teach that in AA. If you're here for that, you're not going to learn it. Sorry. I was out. And I got a job at a restaurant, and they promoted me from a hostess to a server and eventually to a manager, and I started managing at both their locations. My drinking was the same as it always was. I would drink before I went to work. I would take a to-go cup into work with me. Every night was a party. You know, a lot of times I would show up late to work from being too hungover and that kind of thing. But it sort of just seemed like the lifestyle. That's what everybody was doing. Everybody was drinking and partying. And I got promoted, so obviously I'm doing fine, you know? And then the bosses caught on, and they called me to the office and said, you know, you really got a problem. And if you don't do something about it, you won't have a job. But if you do, you will have a job when you get back here. We'll send you wherever you want. And I was like, no, I know where I need to go. I had learned from my brother who had went downhill. He did end up getting sober. He ended up moving in with my grandparents that lived in Ukiah, my grandmother that died. Backtrack a little bit. He's been clean and sober for years now, but I think that when my grandmother did die, that was a huge part of why it hit me so bad, was because she had died of heart failure due to alcoholism. So after she had spent all this time, you know, getting my brother clean and sober, and here I was an alcoholic, and my poor grandmother was up there alone, you know, drinking herself to death, and it really hit me. So that was the first time I went into AA, but anyways, sorry, all over the place now. Going back to where I was at the restaurant, and the bosses called me in, and I came back to AA for the second time, and I was sober for 59 days. I had no intentions of stopping drinking. I only went because they told me I had to go. I didn't want to stop drinking. I was an alcoholic, and I was kind of proud of that, and I thought I could just drink harder and better than everybody, and if I couldn't do it in this job, then this just probably wasn't the right job for me. you know, so I left, and I got another job, obviously, where I'm at now. I've been there for 3 years, and for the last year, up until I got sober, was the first time that I ever in my life tried to control my drinking. And if you're an alcoholic and you try to control your drinking, you realize that you can't. And it says in the big book to control and enjoy our drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. And I found that to be true, that that was me. I tried to control it and enjoy it, and I could not do both at the same time. Every night I was leaving work, and I would always stop at the liquor store, or I'd go with my coworker to the little restaurant, and we'd have a couple beers, and then I'd go to the liquor store. You know, it was always, there was just never enough. There was never, ever enough. And on the last night that I drank, I had got off work. It was a Thursday. And I stopped at the liquor store to get 3 little shooters, because I'm controlling it now. Only going to have 3. Of course, they were 99 bananas or some shit that was like, you know, if I'm going to have 3, it needs to be as strong as possible. And I went over to a friend's house, and we obviously ended up going back to the liquor store, and I don't know what we got, but the next thing I know, I crashed my car, and I had ran into a power line. It had fallen on top of my car, unbeknownst to me at the time. I have very vague memories of trying to start my car and drive it away. Apparently you can't do that if it's totaled and underneath a power line. I didn't know that was the case at the time, but so when I got released from jail in the morning and I went to the tow yard to what I thought was going to be drive my car home, I realized how much destruction had actually occurred, and my car was not drivable. It was completely totaled. It was completely squished down the middle. And I had just moved, so I had a bunch of stuff in my car I was going to get to Goodwill. And when I opened my trunk to get out whatever I could take with me, on top of everything that was laying there was the first big book and the first 12 and 12 that I ever got. And that was a big sign to me, a really big sign to me. Because I remember sitting in the cop car that night. There was another kid in there that they had arrested for a DUI, and I guess they made a detour to come to me along the way of taking him to jail. And he was arguing with the cops, saying, "Didn't you know I only had two beers? And why are you guys even taking me to jail? You don't have a right to take me to jail." And all I could hear was myself the first time I got a DUI, because I sat in the cop car and I did the same thing. And I told these cops, "Who are you to even tell me how I'm supposed to drive on these streets?" And blah, 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 blah. "Who told you you're in charge?" And they opened the door for, you know, my first DUI. They opened the door and said, "Come on, Miss Philosophy, get out." And so... So when I sat there, you know, this last time, and I heard this kid, and he just sounded like me, and I was like, I can't do this anymore. Even in that hazy phase that I was in, I remember sitting there that night thinking, I can't do this anymore. So when I had gone to my car the next day and saw that the big book and the 12 and 12, I knew what I needed to do. And I came back to AA. And I believed in the program because I had seen our, you know, sister, brother, whatever program you want to call it, work for my sibling. And I thought maybe it could work for me too, because this time I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. So I got busy. I started listening to what they said. And, you know, they said, get a sponsor, get a book, listen to the similarities, not the differences. Stay in the herd, stay with the winners. And so I tried to do those things, even though I didn't really want to a lot of the time. I did. I got a sponsor, and we started working the steps. And I don't think I turned my TV on for the first 8 months of my sobriety, because every time I was at home, I was reading the book. And they told me that's what I needed to do, to read the big book. And when I was done reading the big book, reread the big book. You know, study it like your life depends on it, because it does. And I found me in that book. And I studied it, and I did it with a dictionary because I didn't understand a lot of the words that were in the book. But I had a sponsor that helped me get through the steps and helped me, you know, work a fourth step honestly and to get real and to start telling the truth about all the resentments that I had and the things that I had done. Because I had such a warped perception, I always pointed my finger at somebody or something, and there was always some reason for why my life was the way it was, but it certainly was not me. Until you do a fourth step, and then you find out that it is. But I'm grateful for that today, and I can say that I'm a grateful alcoholic, and that phrase was so stupid when I got here, because how are you a grateful alcoholic? It doesn't even make sense. But I am, because today I found a way of life that I never would have found. You know, had I even been able to stop drinking on my own, I never would have found what I found here. So I'm grateful today that it took Alcoholics Anonymous to get me sober. I owe my life to this program, because I couldn't stop drinking. I drank every day from the time I woke up to the time I went to bed, and I thought that's what my life would be. I thought I would just be a drunk. And today, I'm an alcoholic, but I don't have to be a drunk. I have a solution to that today that works every day of my life. But I know that if that's what it is, it's one day at a time, and that sounds cliche, I guess, but it's true. I don't have to worry about tomorrow. All I have is today to worry about how I'm going to be sober today. And I do it with a higher power and with a sponsor and with a program and with a fellowship. I got a commitment as soon as I could. I don't remember how early into my sobriety it was, but I became a secretary for a meeting, maybe around 6 months or so. But from the beginning, I would clean, try and clean coffee cups if I could, because that's what they said to do. And I did it. And I'm so grateful for it today, for the people that kept me connected to this program. To my sponsor and the other women in the program that would invite me out to breakfast in the mornings. And I mean, even tonight, they invited me out to dinner before the meeting. And that's what it takes, you know. I know that today, that it takes a group of people. I can't do it alone. It says we in the first step for a reason. And, you know, and I have that today. I have really strong people around me that are sober and they're happy about it. And we're not going to touch those. but, yeah, I just, that's what it takes, you know. This program, I've realized, is not for people that need it, but for people that want it. Because I needed it the other times that I came here, but I didn't want it. I'm grateful that this time I wanted it. I wanted to be sober. And today I am. I'm sober and I'm happy about it. And I'm very, very grateful. So. I think with that, I'm going to pass the torch on to my favorite little chola.
Thank you, Sarah.